Welcome back to Insights Unlocked. In today's episode, User Testing's Sean Treiser chats with Carla Fernandez, a veteran freelance UI, UX, and product designer, about her tips for working on a team of one successfully, exploring no-code app development, and the importance of inclusive design. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing, where we bring you candid conversations and stories with the thinkers, doers, and builders behind some of the most successful digital products and experiences in the world, from concept to execution.
Welcome to the Insights Unlocked podcast. I'm Nathan Isaacs, Senior Manager for Content Production at User Testing. And joining us today as host is Sean Treiser. Sean is a design strategist at User Testing. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, everyone.
And our guest today is Carla Fernandez. Carla is a digital product designer, consultant, and mentor based in Lucerne, Switzerland. She has 25 plus years of experience working with more than 150 companies, including well-known tech startups, education organizations, and service-based companies. She speaks four languages, has lived in 11 countries, and launched more than a dozen apps. Welcome to the show, Carla.
Hello, Nathan and Sean. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be joining today.
Carla, welcome to the show. I am really looking forward to digging into your experience and your expertise. But I wanted to start off getting just a few pointers from you to set the foundation. At some point in any of our careers, whether you're working for a startup, for yourself, or for a large organization, you're most likely going to find yourself working alone. So as someone who has developed, designed, and launched products all on your own, Carla, what are your tips for success? Could you please share your top three and what experiences have informed them?
Sure, Sean. So I want to start by saying that this isn't something new for me. I have been a freelancer for 18 years, and I have been working remotely for 90% of this time. So it is with the time you get used to some things that, of course, like change the whole strategy of your work experience, right? So I would say that the first one is self-motivation and focus. And I used to talk about it together because I believe they really walk together. I find that what motivates me to start a project, either mine or a customer's, is often that I'm excited to turn it into reality. So for me to maintain focus, I focus on delivering and much before of the deadline. So most of the time I give the customer, okay, this will be the date, but actually I have in my head that I will deliver probably a few days earlier or even a week. So this way I know what I have to focus, and I create project tasks. So I think of the project as a whole. Then afterwards I break them in smaller chunks and I start to execute them. In my opinion, if you don't plan it, it's likely that you struggle to execute. And since motivation isn't constant, even when you love like what you do, right? Like I love, it's very important to keep those planning going. The second one that you help this is time management. I learned this in the really hard way. And most of the time management tasks like that I think about are about prioritizing. Like a working solo on so many projects at the same time is the thing that I really love to do. It's that I get bored of doing this thing and I do this other. So when you have these tasks already talked of before, you can pick and choose what you are excited to do at that moment. So if you get bored with something, you go to something else, but then you are kind of managing it. And you will start to learn and review the time you are allocated for also testing to start to prioritize them. I use a tool that's called Clockify, and I know how efficient I am in each test. Like, so I actually time myself in knowing, oh, this time I'm doing research, how long it takes, what kind of research I am doing, is that one-on-one interviews or is that something else? Then later on, I'm doing high fidelity, is that how much time I use on it? Then when you have similar project, what you happen is that you know the blueprint. You know that you have a certain amount of time that you need to go with it. So I do it that way. And of course, like maybe in the first project, you see that you use the 30 hours. In the second project, maybe you use 50. So you will start with more projects that you have. You have a better understanding of how you work and what every kind of project needs. If this needs more research, if this needs more time for UI. So it really depends, right? But this is the way I manage my time today. And the third one, which is the third, but is still, it's very important. So here it's not the order of importance. I'm thinking that the three are the same amount of importance in my work is collaboration. And think about collaboration. It's really how you seek feedback, how you collaborate with others. You can really be a team of one, but you never build alone. Never. Right? Like you need to build with your customer, you need to build with a team, you need to build with your design friends because they are so good at giving you feedback and criticizing your work with lovely words. And you also need other users to bring you their notes on it, their feedback, it's missing, things that you didn't think about before. So collaboration is really the key for any product development.
Absolutely. I love these practical tips, but I'm also hearing that he kind of underlying all of it is your sense of excitement about the work. And we'll also revisit your theme of collaboration here in just a little bit, but I do want to give our listeners a sense of how you have directed your passion and excitement for your work into specifically the area of no-code app development. Now, that might sound kind of like an oxymoron to folks who haven't heard of it before. Could you please spell out what that means, what no-code app development entails?
Sure. I think most of us have been in touch with no-code everywhere. We just didn't notice it. So like as designers, we probably work with Figma every single day, and that's a no-code tool. So it's a tool that allows you to do something or to build something or to create something without to have you create or a line of code or writing code for it. So in Figma, we just drag and drop things. We move pixels around. We play with the tool, write text and everything. But behind that, there is a lot of code and someone had to thought of the code to make that work. But in our case, what we have is just a simple tool that we just drag things around. So that's a no-code tool. And about my work with no-code, I have been working with it for 3 years now. And yes, I absolutely love that. Like the idea of making products real for me was something that absolutely just got into my heart. I have the app already on the App Store and Google Play Store. And when I did that for the first time, it was just magical. And imagine how magical it was when the first buyer actually bought that. Like, of course, my friends, right? Like I was talking about it to everyone, but still was super exciting just seeing that. First time I made a product, it's an app, it's on the App Store, it's on the Google Play Store, and people can buy it. And I really enjoyed the process, right? Like I was already a designer, of course, like I am a designer for so long time, but it was the difference. It was that as a designer, you are really used to do research, to talk with the users, to understand their needs, to make the product. You, of course, you are never the user, or sometimes you are, but most of the time we aren't. And then we get to build this product that helped them. And then we just hand off to the development team, and the buttons that we thought were orange turn to blue, the rounded corners vanish. And all these details that are not really well cared, just go live. And then you look at that, you don't even want to put in your portfolio. And then you actually can do that extra step as a designer and build it exactly pixel perfect the way you think. So yeah, I hope you can feel the excitement, because that is just marvelous. Just see, oh, I actually just thought of this orange corner here, and that is orange and it's a corner. So it's a very simple thing, but I tell you, it has happened with me, with many development teams, that things don't get as planned. Life.
Of course. So this concept sounds incredibly empowering for people who don't have technical engineering training, for folks who may want to be the solopreneur putting products out into the wild all on their own. Could you expand for me on who kind of would be best fit for this kind of no code building and why it's so important for those folks?
Sure. So I work with founders directly. They don't have the budget. They don't have a development team. They just have this idea which they are in love about. And sometimes they already did the research, some others they didn't, and they want to be able to try it out, which is also okay. Because imagine you can build a product in a couple of days. We are not talking about weeks, months, years. So when you have these small products that you want to try, with no code makes it much easier. So if you are a founder and you want to do something, even if you are not a designer, you can have a designer and do it. Or you can do it, maybe less design like people do today, like a landing page sometimes to launch things. But if you are a designer, you are 60% there. You have the tools, you have the knowledge. You just need to go the extra step. And then you cannot just deliver to your customer, to the startup you work, or to the agency that you are freelancing. You cannot just deliver the design, but you can deliver the product. And I saw this as a thing that it's actually coming back to me, because when I started my career, I was an employee, and then I started to do freelancing for customers directly. And there, they didn't want to hire a designer and a developer. They wanted someone to give them a website, because websites were the new thing. And so that's why I learned front-end development. I started to deliver them what they wanted. It was the whole product. And today we are still in the age that we have this whole big team. And many times actually the companies are development driven. So they have this whole development team much before they have a single designer in their team to do anything. So they are a team of zero there. And so with this, you can see that it's much simpler for you to start with no code and test your idea and get it out there. And a lot of people, you think that there are a lot of limitations, and of course there are, but I have customers that have apps with almost 10,000 users already.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big tipping point. I'd love to dig into what you mentioned just there around testing. When you are a team of one, it can be difficult at times to know that you're heading in the right direction with product market fit, right? So what advice would you have for capturing, tracking, and leveraging customer insights when you have limited time and resources?
I think the best advice any designer can give is really to start iterating and testing, right? Like test and iterate all the time. And yes, you can start with a solution that you think that is the right fit, but then you have to do research somehow. You have to maybe engage your community, build a community around your product. Try to gather those from social media, maybe online groups, forums. You can start prioritizing insights from those that are using the product if it's already in beta testing. If it's not, like if it's really early stage, you bring them to test either shadow interviewing or one-on-one interviewing. Of course, using tools like user testing, right? Like you guys made the platform for us to test with several people that we don't even need to know. And then we get all these insights, and then we can test age. We can think about the right fit for this product. And also one thing that a lot of companies that I work with forget about is analytics. I don't know what's going on that people forget that this exists, that a lot of websites, they may have a product and they come to me and say, okay, we have a product, it sells, but we don't know where is the problem, that sometimes people come in and they leave or they don't buy, they put in the cart. And I'm like, okay, so you know how many people put in the cart, but what was their journey? Where they did go through in your website? Oh, we don't know. So you are not tracking that. You are not having analytics or to measure what's the behavior, which page they are visiting or not. So a lot of companies are still missing that too. So it's not really just about what people tell you, because many of the times what they tell you is what you want to hear. It's not every user that you tell you what they actually think. And if your product's really already in high fidelity, that's even worse. Because then they are really thinking, I hurt someone when I say, I don't get this, I don't understand that. And you have to be mindful of it.
That's really interesting. Your point around high fidelity products can actually lead to potentially misleading feedback. Well, would love to change topics just a little bit to focus on your experience with building inclusive digital products. For our listeners, according to the World Health Organization, it's estimated that 1.3 billion people experience disability. And this group, along with their friends and family, have a spending power of $13 trillion. Yet many, if not most, digital products are not designed with accessibility in mind. So Carla, in your experience, what do brands and UX designers need to consider as they seek to understand how users interact with their products and how accessible they are for everyone?
That is such a good question, Sean. Really, I believe there are two words there. And of course, even when you are working by yourself in your own product, you should really think of the minimal things, right? Like the color contrast, the font sizes, like those things that are so small that you cannot miss. But a lot of companies, a lot of brands is still miss that even in the branding part. Right? It is like they hire an agency that makes this really cool brand and has this orange that nobody can work with. It's like, it's such a slightly example. It's like an orange. Like everyone knows that orange is a terrible color. So you can maybe try to make that a different tone or so. And then it's so hard to make a product accessible later on with the basics that people think that the designers behind it must not know what they are doing, right? And it's so important. Actually, I want to talk about it in a bigger way, that as a designers and working teams, like when you are working teams, you should have, in my opinion, a research around the team around you. The business people, the sales people, the development team, like everyone, to know if in your company you have someone with disabilities and what type. For you to make it available for them to help you, because they already understand the product. They know what's around. And a lot of people miss that, and I missed it too, so I can confess. I have been collaborating with a business team for a while, and in one of the presentations, I really focused into coloring all the insights I had on research. And after the call, he was so kind to just write me in private saying, it was really great presentation, but most of it I could not understand because I didn't know where it was located. And then I was like, okay, what did I miss? And then he's colorblind. And I was so ashamed and at the same time so happy. So it was a very mixed feeling. I told him this is so amazing. I'm so glad you came up and told me that, because could I take your help in looking at some stuff, right? Like, could I chat with you? And he was really happy to help. Because imagine, like, you are actually now not including only the users that you use your product, but also your team in the product development. And they are really good at giving you insights and being kind to you and knowing why you are doing what you are doing. So this is just amazing. I do believe that you should run this in every company as a design team to know if anybody there is with any disability. And I want to extend that to you, that I said about the inclusive design principles, that basic ones, right, that we are all the time trying to adopt, or not to miss them, right? But we still need to keep learning about it and improving and getting buy-in from key stakeholders, because sometimes this is not as important. And it's always the last step. We are all running against the time, and then in the last step, let's check things. So maybe reverse engineer. Start with it. Think of the process, right? Like, I developed projects for the government in Brazil, and their accessibility was question number one, right? Like, we even had to use software in different ways just to get everything done. And when you are working with government, I think France right now, it's a really huge, amazing example of accessibility, and they are doing a great work. And I think a lot of other countries need to come to it, because a lot of them are not. And the next thing I want to say, that I really want to talk about it, is that a product is not only accessible if it includes people with disabilities. There are a lot of products out there broken for people with no disability. No disability. And nobody is caring for this. Not even them, right? Like, it's the login and password. You don't validate your users. Other people receive your emails. Your funnel is wrong. So there are so many steps that are broken for a normal person. So imagine those people with disabilities, how they are encountering problems. If we designers without disabilities are able to encounter those problems and get frustrated, I just imagine how frustrated it is for someone with disability to go throughout all this process and not be able to see something, right? Like, in the seeing spectrum, there is such a large, right? From total blind to sight blind, and there are so many things that you could take in consideration. And yes, we aim to have a perfect product, but we never get there. So the other thing that I believe we should take into consideration is to check with this community that I just spoke about and the people close to the product and see what's going on there or what people are complaining about. What are the mistakes that we should prevent? What are the things that we must correct right now?
I love the idea of incorporating these inclusive design principles up front, which can empower teams to be proactive about those considerations. I agree with you. I think most of the experiences we see out there now treat accessibility considerations as an afterthought and pose the kind of execution teams in a reactive mode. But the truth is that the best and most universal experiences account for inclusive and diverse perspectives at the very front end of a project, and give the most opportunity for anyone to receive value from that product. Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing your experience and wisdom here today. I really enjoyed our conversation. For our listeners, how can they learn more about you and your many different projects?
Yeah, I'm really open to connect with everyone on LinkedIn. So I really enjoy using the platform there, and also on my website, that is vitaminak.design.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for joining us, Carla. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It was amazing to be here. Thank you for having me.
Want to keep the conversation going? You can find the show notes at usertesting.com/podcast. If you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or Google Play so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, please share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And until next time, this is Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing.